Our Bible reading is from the book of Ruth. We started looking at Ruth last week. We looked at Ruth chapter 1 last week, if you were here, and we're going to read Ruth chapter 2 this week together. You'll find that on page 267 if you have one of these red Bibles. Ruth chapter 2, and we read from verse 1. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Amen, and may God bless to us that reading of his holy word. I wonder if you've ever had the experience of someone taking you under their wing. You ever known what that has been like? Maybe you remember a time from school when someone came and put their arm around you. Maybe you remember a teacher who took an interest in you and developed in you a love for their subject, but maybe also helped you just in your growth and development as an individual. They took you under your wing. Maybe when you started work, there was a senior colleague that took you under your wing. Maybe like Alec Ferguson and Ryan Giggs, something like that. Someone that took you under their wing. And maybe they didn't do it in quite that way. But they made sure you're okay, that you knew where the canteen was and you knew when it was time to go home at night, stuff like that. Maybe there's someone here at Partick Trinity that when you arrived at this church and maybe you were new to Glasgow, I don't know, and they just welcomed you. You knew you were loved. You knew that you were at home. And you knew that they were putting their arms around you and putting you under their wing, making you feel part of the family. Last week, we left Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi, as they were arriving in Bethlehem. And as we read chapter 2 this morning, as we've just read chapter 2, we find that there's a new character comes to the stage in this drama, because that's what it is. It's a drama from first to last. He's a man by the name of Boaz. And we read that he is a man of standing. He's a man of standing. He's a man of some financial means. He's got his own field or his own portion of the communal field in Bethlehem. And he has people that work for him. He's got an overseer or a foreman, if you like, who has laborers under him. He's one of the movers and the shakers in the town of Bethlehem. But he's a man of standing also in that he's a man of worth and he's a man of caliber. He's a man of substance. He's a man who has integrity. And this too is what it means when we are introduced to Boaz as a man of standing. He is related to Naomi's late husband and his name was Elimelech, you may know. That doesn't necessarily mean that he was a very close relation, but he was related to Elimelech and by Elimelech to Naomi. And that fact becomes important as this drama unfolds in the chapters that follow. And he's a man that's heard all about Ruth. That's what we read in verse 11. I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. And that's perhaps because he's a relative, but perhaps more likely because the news has traveled around Bethlehem as Naomi comes back after this 10-year absence and she is with Ruth. And the news goes round about what has happened to Naomi, what her experience has been, and of this remarkable young woman, Ruth, who has come with Naomi back to Bethlehem and has said, your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And Boaz has heard all about that. So he knows all about Ruth even before he has set eyes on her. And Boaz prays in verse 12, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Because Boaz knows that Ruth has not only come to Bethlehem to keep her mother-in-law company. She has not only come to Bethlehem in search of food, because there was food in Moab, but she has come to Bethlehem to throw herself on the grace of the Lord God Almighty. And Boaz gets that. And he says, I'm so pleased that you have come to take refuge under the wings of the Lord God Almighty. And it's a beautiful picture. Any human experience we might happen to have of being taken under someone's wing or looking on as we see someone else taking another under their wing really has nothing on this. God himself taking Ruth under his wings as she comes to seek her refuge in him. And it's a picture of total trust, isn't it? And utter security and perfect warmth and peace and sweet tenderness and unconditional love that we have here between Ruth and her God. And this image of taking refuge under the wings of God is one that comes up again and again in the pages of the Bible. We see it in the Psalms. We see it a number of times in the Psalm. Just one of them is in Psalm 63, a psalm of David. And we read towards the end of the psalm in verse 9 that there are those that want to kill the psalmist. So he is at a particularly low point and difficult point, terrible point in his life. And then we read in verse 6, and it's in the middle of his sleepless nights when he's tossing and he's turning. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night because you are my help. I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me under the shadow of the wings of God. We see it too in the New Testament. We read words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 23. You may be familiar with these words. Matthew 23, 37. Jesus looking and feeling for Jerusalem and with such pity and with such sadness. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. Beautiful picture of the intent and the love of Jesus Christ, and then such tragedy, but you were not willing. They were not willing to be gathered under the wings of God. But Ruth is willing. Ruth is willing to find her shelter and refuge under the wings of God and find her all in all there. She's willing to come there. And there's no question, you see, of whether God is deciding, will I, won't I take her under my wing? You know, I'm not quite sure about this. God throws her arms around her. He embraces her and he gladly takes her under his wing and protects her and leads her and guides her and is her God so that she can rest secure under his strong and protective wings. And that picture of taking refuge under the wings of God is one that our hymn writers and songwriters have picked up through the generations. Jesus, lover of my soul, cover my defenseless head with the shadow of your wings. Or living under the shadow of your wings, we find security. You know, to someone that really didn't know any better, just looking on at Ruth's life, it just might have looked as if Ruth got a lucky break in chapter 2 of this story. It just might have looked like that. It might have looked as if Ruth's number had come up in the lottery and everything had just fallen into place. And just somehow, that was just good for Ruth. We're pleased for her, that's nice, but it was just one of these things. It was pure chance, and it worked out badly for some, and it worked out well for Ruth. You know, that's not what happened. It's not that Ruth went out gleaning and she went out looking for leftovers at harvest, but she lands on her feet and she ends up with more food than she knows what to do with, and then things get better and better as she moves on to chapters 3 and 4, because of all people, she lands up in Boaz's field. And if you wanted to go out gleaning, then the one place you wanted to be in Bethlehem, I think, would have been in Boaz's field. But you know, that's not what's going on here. Ruth didn't get a lucky break. Something infinitely more wonderful and far deeper and utterly planned was going on. What was going on is that there was that God was taking control of Ruth's life, and he was graciously providing for his dear daughter who had come to take refuge under his wings, because he loves her with a love that is far, far deeper than Ruth could even begin to imagine. We read about that in chapter chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, don't you think that our narrator has got something of his tongue in his cheek here? As it turned out, because this book is about God's providence from beginning to end, God's care and control and his work in the lives of his people. And it was God that was turning it out. Ruth landed up in Boaz's field, and that he was setting his heart on her, and that he was weaving her life together into his eternal plans and purposes. It wasn't a coincidence that Ruth ended up in Boaz's field. It's what we sometimes call a God incidence. It was God at work here. And it was an answer to Naomi's prayer. Way back in chapter 1 and in verse 8, Naomi prayed about her daughters-in-law. "May the Lord show you kindness," Naomi prayed. And what we find is the Lord showing Ruth kindness. And it's amazing, and we try and we cannot get our heads around how God weaves our prayers and his providence and his care and his plans all together. But he is God and we are people. And what we do is we stand back in wonder and in gratitude that we worship such a God as this. Do you know what it's like to take refuge under the wings of God? I don't know. I'm just getting to know some of you here, and I'm very much enjoying that. I don't know each of you. I don't know the circumstances of your lives. But do you know what it is to take refuge under the wings of God? To know that your life doesn't amount to just being tossed about this way and that on some kind of a random sea of chance, but that we take refuge under the wings of God, no matter what the storms of life that God in his providence allows to come our way. There's such security in taking refuge under the wings of the Lord. Not that everything turns out all right. That's not the picture that we see in the Bible, that life is easy, but that all is well, and that ultimately all really is well, taking refuge under the wings of God. That was Ruth's experience. It was Boaz's experience too. And by God's grace, it can be our experience as well. And I pray that it is your experience here this morning. And if it is our experience, then at least two things should follow from that. And we see both of them in this chapter. And the first one's this: we're to live in the Lord's way if we take refuge under the Lord's wings. This is what Ruth does. Ruth's not one of these people that just talks the talk, you know, people that can do a good talk. Ruth's not just someone that just talks the talk. Ruth is someone that walks the walk. And Ruth is someone that literally walked the walk as she walked away from the gods of Moab and she walked towards the one true God of Israel. She leaves the false gods of Moab behind. And we were thinking about that last week in verse 5 of chapter 1. She didn't go back to Moab and to the false gods there as Orpah did, her sister-in-law. But she comes to Bethlehem as an act of choice and quite deliberately to follow the God of Israel and to live his way. That's what we find in verse 16 of chapter 1. "Where you go, I go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. I will make your God my God too." Now, we can look down our 21st century noses at Ruth, and maybe there are 20th century noses. I don't know. Maybe it depends when the noses were made or when the noses are existing. I don't know. But we can look down our noses at Ruth, and we can say, oh, how quaint. How primitive that she is walking away from the false gods and the idols of Moab, and she's coming to follow the one true God of Israel. We would never have a problem like that. that she left gods of wood and stone or whatever. But we have plenty of false gods of our own, don't we? We have plenty of idols of our own. And we have gods of wood and stone as well. Our houses can become our false gods too. Our homes, our cars, our television screens, as we pay homage to them for how many hours a week. And I'm not saying don't watch television, but I'm just saying there can be a limit and there could be wisdom in what we watch. And we might have false gods of personal ambition. We might have false gods of selfishness. We might have false gods of pride. And there is nothing at all quaint, and there's nothing at all ancient about following after false god, because a false god, because it's something that is alive and kicking today. And we are to reject false gods. And like Ruth, we are to walk away from them. That may involve literally walking away from them. It may involve dealing with our false gods in some other way. But whatever it is that gets in between us and God, we need to deal with it. And we are all individuals, and we all have different lives, and we all have different things that get in between us and God. But there are things that are there. And if there are not, there are things that are vying for that position in our lives. And we need to say no to these things. William Cowper, a hymn writer in the 18th century, he wrote that a man that lived a life where he had many, many, many struggles, if you know anything about the life of William Cowper. The dearest idol I have known, whate'er that idol be, help me to tear it from thy throne and worship only thee. And sometimes we need to tear our false gods and our idols from the throne that is rightfully God's, so that we can worship him and live for him alone. Ruth lives the Lord's way. But then we see also in the life of Boaz that Boaz lives the Lord's way too. And we see it somewhere very practical. We see it in Boaz's workplace. Boaz's workplace was his field. And that's where we see him living the Lord's way. God had given instructions to landowners that they weren't to harvest right to the very edges of their field. They were to leave some of the stuff that was around the edges of their field. And that wasn't because their combine harvesters couldn't get to the difficult bits to get at the edges of the field. That was so that they could leave that grain and that stuff for the people that were more vulnerable. They were to leave it for the people that were poor. They were to leave it for the people that had just come to that land, for the immigrants. We read about that in the book of Leviticus. And in Leviticus 19, we read Leviticus 19, verse 9. I don't expect that's a memory verse for too many of us here this morning, but Leviticus 19:9, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them from the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. That's something of the love of God seen in the law of God. Sometimes we're tempted to think of the law of God as something that is restrictive. The law of God, beautifully designed in contrast to the laws that were going on in the other ancient Near Eastern civilizations, the law of God designed to show love and to take care for those who were vulnerable. We see also in Deuteronomy as well, in Deuteronomy 24 and verse 19, a similar thing. But we read, leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. So we see how the widow in these days, and in these days of no social security and all the rest of it, how God's care and compassion is shown in the way that he has formulated the law of his people. And of course, his people had a choice as to whether they were going to obey that law or not, whether they were going to live the Lord's way or not. But what we find is that with Boaz, he is a man that takes God's word seriously, he takes God's law seriously, and in Boaz's field, there is plenty of grain that is left around the edges for the poor, for the immigrant, for the widow, and for those who are in need. That's how things ran his field at harvest time, just because that's the kind of man he was. So easy, isn't it, to sing out God's praise on a Sunday morning and to really enjoy it and to really mean it. But then for Monday to Friday or Monday to Saturday to be just a bit of a different story. Some of us here are in the workplace, others of us are not, and let's stick with the workplace because that's the flow of the passage at the moment. But whether we're at home or at work or with our friends or at the shops or whether we're at the leisure centre or whether we're just walking down the street, whatever it is, how we behave needs to be consistent with what it is that we believe. We're to be people of integrity. And if we have a job, if we're fortunate to have a job, then our integrity needs to start and be seen and be practiced in the workplace. And often, it's in the small and in the unimportant things that we get these tests, seemingly unimportant things that we get the tests of our integrity. How we fill in expense forms or timesheets, if that's something that we might happen to have to do in our job. Or how we react, and this is a big one, how we react in the tea room or in the canteen or wherever people stop for a break, and they must stop for a break sometimes, surely, in your job. How we react when there's gossip and there's back chat and all the rest of it, isn't that a real test? How do we act with integrity as Christians in these situations? And it's in these seemingly small tests that God is telling us, if we shelter, if we take our refuge under his wings, then we are to live in the Lord's way. And the thing that happens is that if we get into the habit of living the Lord's way with these smaller things, with these seemingly unimportant things, whether that's in the workplace or whether that's in some other environment, if we're in the habit of doing that, then when the big tests come along, when the things come on that are along that are really crunch issues and that are things that really test our integrity sorely, then we will be in the habit and we are more likely to be in the habit of living the Lord's way. And that's what happens in Boaz's life, as we won't cover it today, but as we move on into chapters 3 and 4, there are bigger tests. There are bigger tests of whether Boaz is living the Lord's way, and Boaz is able to meet these tests. And part of why he's able to meet these tests is because he is a man who has had practice. He's a man who's practiced living the Lord's way before, when it seemed as if it wasn't really that important, just leaving a bit of grain down the side of the field or making a few more coins profit doesn't seem such a big deal. It's a big deal to Boaz, and he made sure that he lived the Lord's way. Those who take refuge under the wings of the Lord are to live the Lord's way. But there's a second thing that is to follow from taking refuge under the Lord's way, and this is it. We're to love the Lord's people, and this ties in so closely to what David was saying earlier on. I had no idea what David was going to be saying earlier on, but it ties in so closely with it. We're to love the Lord's people. We see Ruth's love for Naomi in this chapter. A wonderful thing to see Ruth's love for Naomi. What a daughter-in-law Ruth is. She takes the initiative. That's what we see at the beginning of the chapter. She takes it on her mind and her heart, and she gets on her feet. She takes the initiative and she goes out gleaning. She does that on her own. She does it in a strange land, and she doesn't really know many of the folks in Bethlehem, if any. That was an exceedingly brave thing to do. Sometimes it's brave just going to a new place on your own. That can be a brave thing for many of us. This was beyond that. Verse 8 and 9, we read what Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here." This is once she's landed in Boaz's field. "Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you." Ruth was a young woman. She was a foreigner. There weren't people around necessarily that she would imagine would be there to be looking out for her. And to some extent, she was a target. She was vulnerable. in that situation. That's why Boaz says, don't go in another field. He wants her to be safe. And that's a picture of her bravery in going out to do this gleaning. And she doesn't just do it for herself. She doesn't just do it as part of her instinct for survival. She leaves Naomi at home, and she goes out gleaning for the both of them. And she works hard. When Boaz asks his foreman, his overseer, in verse 5, who that young woman is, he's told that she's hardly stopped all day. She just went for a short rest in the shelter, but she's been working hard all day. He's a woman of industry. And then after tea, and we'll come back to tea in a minute or two, but after tea she's out again. And she's gathering in more grain, and she's collecting more. And she is working like a ninja to make sure that she has enough grain for her and for her mother-in-law. And then after that, you find in verse 17, she goes to thresh the grain. She must have been exhausted. I don't know. I don't know what it's like to gather grain all day, but I imagine it's pretty tiring. And then she's threshing the grain after that in verse 17, and she collects an ephah. And if you have one of these NIV Bibles and you've looked down to the footnotes because you don't know what on earth an ephah is, you'll have found out that it's probably about 13 kilograms, probably about 13 big bags of flour. And that seems to be quite a lot of work for one day. This is the amount of work that Ruth has been doing, and she's done all that. And then you imagine her walking back to the town, and it's late at night, and with these big 13 bags of flour, and she's going to see Naomi. Because Naomi would be hungry, and Ruth is taking back her food for Naomi, and that will be enough to keep the two of them going for the next fortnight, probably. And then there's a lovely touch as well in verse 18. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. She brought out she'd been given a doggy bag from her tea, and she was able to give that to her mother-in-law afterwards so that she could enjoy some roasted grain, which sounds like something of a delicacy in that time. Do you see just the attention to detail and the love that Ruth has for her mother-in-law? And it's an expression of her love for God's people. Yes, Naomi is all but her adopted mother now, and yes, it's a love for someone in the family, in her almost natural family, but this is also an expression of her love for God's people, because part of why she's going with Naomi to Bethlehem is because she had made Naomi's God her God, and she's identifying as one of the Lord's people. And we see this as well. We see it too in Boaz's love. We see it in Boaz's love for Ruth. We see this way of loving the Lord's people being a consequence of Boaz taking refuge under the wings of the Lord. And again, as these chapters go on, we see Boaz's love for Ruth grow and develop, and it develops into something else entirely. And if you don't know the story already, I don't want to absolutely give the game away. But before Boaz has even set eyes on Ruth, and he's only seeing her in the distance, and he's heard that she's come to take refuge in the wings of the Lord. Remember, we were thinking about that a moment ago, when his foreman tells him, yes, that woman over there, that's Ruth. Yeah, and Boaz, it clicks together, and the cogs go round in his mind. He thinks, yes, that's Ruth. That's the young woman. That's Naomi's daughter-in-law who's come to take refuge in the land of Bethlehem, to take refuge under the wings of the Lord. And Boaz just couldn't have been kinder. And yes, as you read between the lines, as this story goes on, you do get the sense that there's something going on between Boaz and Ruth, and that's wonderful and lovely to see. But I get the impression this is what Boaz would have been like with anyone in Ruth's position in this situation. These are early, early days, and Boaz is showing kindness to Ruth, and he is the instrument of the answer to Naomi's prayer that God would show kindness to Ruth. Isn't it wonderful how God puts all these pieces together? And he says in verse 8, my daughter, a lovely term of endearment, and it gives us a hint that there's a little bit of an age difference between the two of them. And then he goes on and he says, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me and follow along after them." He's concerned for her. He's concerned for her safety. He's concerned for our well-being. He's concerned that she won't be thirsty either. He allows her to go and drink from the water that the men have collected as well. And this goes way beyond what the law in Leviticus or Deuteronomy would have stipulated. Boaz showing kindness, the kindness of God to Ruth. He's loving the Lord's people. And you know, when Ruth asks Boaz why she's found favor in his eyes, verse 10, we read, she asks him directly, "Why is it? Why am I so fortunate that you've been like this to me?" Verse 11, "I've been told all about you, all about what you have done, and may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've taken refuge." What Boaz has done is an expression of his love for all the Lord's people. It's lovely as well. Boaz tells his men not to embarrass Ruth. Ruth asked to gather among the sheaves. That's not what you did if you were gleaning. Verse 7, she asks to gather among the sheaves. And Boaz tells his men in verses 15, he says, "Don't reprimand her if she gathers among the sheaves." That's the collected grain. She should have been gathering round the edges. Don't reprimand her. He's concerned even that she wouldn't be embarrassed, that she'd feel at ease in this working environment. And that's the extent of how Boaz is dealing with Ruth. It's truly beautiful. And when Ruth asks, and once she's finished at the end of the day, in verse 21, he says, when Ruth's relating this story to Naomi later, Boaz has been saying, "You come back anytime you like. You come back to this field anytime you like and make sure that you're okay." See, Boaz isn't going through the motions here. Do you think Boaz is going through the motions? I don't think Boaz is going through the motion. There's nothing half-hearted about his love. And yes, he's pleased to have Ruth around. I'm sure he is pleased to have Ruth around. But this is a man who is an entirely genuine and no strings attached love for God's people. And we see it too in his lovely greeting for his laborers. "The Lord be with you." Verse 4, "I used to work in the NHS and I've been to more team meetings than I can possibly remember in my time in the NHS. And I don't ever remember one of them starting like that. The Lord be with you." Some of them were memorable. I enjoyed a great many of them, actually. Some of them were memorable, but none of them were memorable in that way. "The Lord be with you." But this is the way things run with Boaz. What a great way to start with the day. "The Lord be with you. The Lord be with you." Those who take refuge under the wings of the Lord are to love the people of God. And that kind of love is not just a feeling. It's not just a warm feeling inside that we have for God's people or for each other as the family of God in this place. It's about commitment. It's about self-sacrifice. Sometimes, and this is important, it's about forgiveness too. That's part of what it means to love the people of God. But when we learn to love the people of God, do you know what happened? And David quoted this earlier on, John 13:35. "By this shall all people know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Everyone will know. Sometimes we have strategies about how we reach out into our parish. Sometimes we plan about how we reach out with the good news of Jesus Christ and let the whole world know. And it's right that we do. And it's right that we have a plan. But you know, behind it all people will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. That's how people know it's genuine. That's how people know it's the real thing, if we have love for one another and if we're loving the Lord's people. Tertullian was an apologist in the 2nd century. He wasn't a Christian, but he gave the verdict of the unbelieving Roman world about Christians. And this was it. See how these Christians love one another. That's what they were known for. They were known for their love. And then when they pass on the good news of Jesus Christ, people are attracted to it because they see an attractive and a fully genuine love for the Lord's people, by the Lord's people. You know, sometimes we sing, "Just as I am, without one plea, but that thy blood was shed for me." And it's a wonderful truth that we can come to God just as we are. We can come no other way. We have to come just as we are. We throw ourselves on his grace and mercy. But having taken refuge under the wings of the Lord, Jesus does not want us to stay just as we are. He wants us not only to be converts, he wants us to be disciples. And part of being a disciple is to live the Lord's way and to love the Lord's people. Well, the barley harvest is finishing. Then the wheat harvest finishes as well. And we see that note of promise that we, if you were here last week, that we saw as harvest time was approaching, a note of promise at the end of chapter 1. It's beginning to be fulfilled. We've seen a little bit more of that silver thread of hope that we saw a glimpse of at the end of chapter 1. The harvest will need to be winnowed. And that's going to happen at the threshing floor. And year after year, the harvest was winnowed at the threshing floor. But this is going to be a winnowing at the threshing floor that, again, is unlike any other. And we look forward to finding out how Ruth discovers in a new, in a deeper and an even more meaningful way, just something of the extent of what it means to take refuge under the wings of the Lord, the God of Israel.